Did a local psychiatric hospital hold patients against their will? This morning, the latest on bipartisan calls for a federal investigation. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live here at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. And just ahead, why a BuzzFeed news investigation is putting the spotlight on a Jacksonville facility. Whether it put profits over patients, you can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's our new program here at WJCT Television. We'll speak with host Jim West about the new show, Destination Craft. Plus, Cole Pepper on the Jaguars' woes. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first, this hour, prominent lawmakers in Washington are calling for an investigation into America's largest psychiatric chain, Universal Health Services. This after a BuzzFeed News investigation found that at least 10 UHS hospitals were locking people in who were not a danger to themselves or others, and it's alleged they held them until their insurance ran out. Employees of the hospital chain told BuzzFeed they were under pressure to fill hospital beds by methods like exaggerating people's symptoms, even distorting their words to make them sound suicidal. One of these facilities is River Point, a UHS psychiatric hospital located here in Jacksonville. U.S. Senators Republican Charles Grassley and Democrat Elizabeth Warren are among the lawmakers now calling for an investigation in the wake of these revelations. UHS didn't respond to a call for comment Friday, but the hospital chain has previously denied that it held people against their will solely to make a profit. Reporter Rosalind Adams of BuzzFeed has been reporting the story, and she's on the line now with more. Rosalind, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And what are your questions as we look at allegations that this large psychiatric hospital chain, UHS, with a facility here in Jacksonville, allegedly held patients against their will? According to former employees, it was to maximize profits. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. And Rosalind, after this year-long BuzzFeed News investigation, interviews with more than 100 current and former staff, along with patients, government investigators, you have unearthed these details about UHS.
Yeah.
And so how did this story begin for you? How did this first come to your attention?
Actually, I started looking into UHS because the company had disclosed in one of its annual reports that a number of their hospitals were under federal investigation. There was some questions about its billing practices to the Office of the Inspector General at Health and Human Services. You know, that definitely caught my attention to have so many hospitals be under investigation. It didn't seem like a one-off. And actually, River Point was mentioned in the filing because it had been referred to for criminal investigation from the Civil Division. So I actually started my reporting in Jacksonville, talking first to former patients who had been at the hospital. And everyone just had the same story that, you know, they had gotten there by one way or another. But they always felt like they had been held a little bit too long, or when they tried to sign out or leave the hospital, they were given the weird excuses or told they couldn't leave, or they had had a petition for involuntary commitment filed against them. And just to hear that repetition of that same story so many times made me feel like there was definitely something here. And then I started talking to former employees at River Point. And, you know, a number of them had been with the hospital for a long time. And then when this previous CEO took over, Gail Eckerd, and then UHS went on to buy the facility, they just had really strong concerns about how patients are being taken care of and how there was this emphasis on just keeping people based on how many days of insurance they had. And then from there, it was trying to figure out if this is just River Point or if
it went beyond. And when you talk about River Point, the former employees have emphasized to you that when the management changed, there was this extraordinary emphasis on making sure patients stayed for 10 days or more, they alleged, so that they could maximize government payments. Can you tell us a little bit more about the documentation of that?
Yeah, sure. So at River Point, for a while, they had a lot of older patients, geriatric patients, who were, you know, being funded by Medicare. And Medicare especially, there's not the same sort of oversight and review process that commercial insurance companies have. So if you are admitted to a psychiatric hospital on Medicare, the government will pay for a 10-day stay at a certain flat rate. And then after 10 days, that payment starts to go down slightly. A lot of it seemed to be aimed at those Medicare patients, because it's very easy to keep those patients because there's not that review process. And then in the course of a public records request, I had requested complaints about the hospital from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. There was a document that said the central office had requested the state to look in to inspect the hospital precisely for all of the things that employees, I'm sorry, were saying, that they were keeping everybody for 10 days, that it was all about maximizing insurance payments, that they were misusing Florida's involuntary commitment law in order to do this. And so that gave us further confirmation of what was happening at River Point.
And we'll go to your calls for reporter Rosalind Adams of BuzzFeed on this investigation into Universal Health Services and the local facility River Point. It's 549-2937. We need to stress that River Point disputes these allegations. They are cooperating with the investigation, and they have not been charged with any wrongdoing. That said, your investigation goes beyond the Jacksonville facility and looks at the chain as a whole. UHS is under federal investigation. Republican Senator Charles Grassley, Democrat Senator Elizabeth Warren, in the wake of the publication of your story on BuzzFeed, are now calling for a further probe. That's new this morning, correct?
Yeah, that's new. They came out on Friday they want more information from the federal government as to what's happening on the investigation. Elizabeth Warren called for the Department of Justice to investigate it further. Chuck Grassley as well. I sent a letter to the Health and Human Services Department with a deadline of December 23rd for more information on what's happening on the company.
And it's extraordinary, the claims by the former employees where they say they were pressured to really emphasize the bottom line over the patient care, to actually exaggerate or distort the patient's behavior so as to justify keeping them, whether or not they wanted to stay or whether or not the health professionals thought they needed to stay.
Right. Yeah, it was honestly, just even investigating the story was something very shocking to hear over and over again. I think every time I talk to somebody in a new hospital and they describe this to me, it was, you know, just an incredible thing to hear. But yeah, especially I think intake workers, the people who are working in admissions, you know, they're always being tracked on how full the hospital is. And what they described is that when there were more open beds in the facility, there was more pressure often from their administrator or their director to get people into the hospital. And it was always questions of, well, why couldn't we have admitted this person? Or are you sure they weren't a threat? Like, what if you phrased it this way? And in this very, like, consistent way across a number of hospitals is very surprising.
Now, Universal Health Services, you report via BuzzFeed News, has a profit margin of about 30%, $7.5 billion in revenue from inpatient care last year. About a third of that comes through Medicare and Medicaid payments. How does that compare with some of their competitors?
Definitely nonprofit facilities have a lower profit margin, but there's another competitor, Acadia, who seem to have similar profit margins just from looking at their annual reports. But I think the thing here, too, is that UHS is just so large, and they operate so many facilities. The you know, some of these allegations are just really grave, and I think definitely warrant further investigation.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with reporter Rosalind Adams of BuzzFeed, as she's been reporting. River Point, a UHS psychiatric hospital based in Jacksonville, is one of an entire chain of facilities under federal investigation, as former employees and patients allege that patients were sometimes held against their will so as to maximize profits, something that the chain denies. But we want your calls right now. It's 549-2937. Matt is in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Matt. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I live downtown, and I noticed sort of a different pattern and actually went on to ask questions about this and found something interesting. So I noticed that the homeless people that seemed mentally unstable were constantly being cycled through. I would see them for 3 days, then they would be gone. Then they would come back and they would seem a little bit more stable. A couple days later, they would have problems again. And then I wouldn't see them again for 3 days. And so I asked my buddy who works at Liberty Ambulance, you know, what's going on? Why aren't they keeping these people? And they would say that this is as long as the state will pay for them. So it's just a cycle of, you know, using the homeless population or the people experiencing homelessness in Jacksonville to sort of fund this in a different way. And I was just curious if she, maybe your reporter, had looked at that as an avenue for fraudulent revenue as well.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Thanks for that call, Rosalind. You're looking at the larger issue of Medicare fraud, but the phenomenon that he documents is all too real. In that, in this state, someone who seems to be mentally unstable or a danger to themselves or to others really can only be held for a short amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of this issue. I think, you know, the larger theme that came out of my reporting was these admission and discharge decisions are being made based on if you have insurance. And one of the things we found was that if you have commercial insurance, you're just going to stay longer. And if you have public insurance, whether it's, you know, Medicaid from the state or Medicare from the federal government, Medicare is slightly different because of the 10-day stay that I described previously. But if you're uninsured, then those people cycle out really, really quickly. And one of the admissions people that I've spoken to sort of summed it up by saying, like, you know, we're admitting people who don't always need care, and then the people who do need care don't always get it. Yeah, or what you're describing, where they only get it for 2 days at a time or 3 days at a time. And these facilities are really supposed to be short-term stabilization facilities. And somebody, you know, some of the homeless population or these chronically mentally ill people, it's hard for them to treat them as well. But even still, they're often releasing them, I think. Well, I shouldn't say often, but, you know, I think they do get released before they're stable, and it's sort of this testament to how the system as a whole is not exactly serving the population.
And were patients at River Point or other UHS hospitals, were they actively being held prisoner? Were they telling hospital staff, hey, I want to go home, and being told, no, we won't let you leave?
Yeah, I did hear that from patients and employees too. In Florida, if you're admitted on a Baker Act, after 3 days on the Baker Act, the hospital can file a petition for involuntary commitment. And, you know, what was happening is that after those 3 days, you're either voluntary or the hospital has to file this petition. So we found that the hospital was just, like, the number of petitions that they filed just skyrocketed. And once you're on that petition, unless you file your own petition to be released, you know, a judge certify, or you go to a hearing, then you can legally be held at that hospital. So, you know, the year before UHS took over, they had filed a couple hundred of these petitions for involuntary commitment. And at the height of sort of their revenue stream, they had filed 1,300. So what the therapist told me at the hospital was just that they just started filing them on everybody who, if they had insurance or if they didn't sign in voluntarily, as a way to keep them there. And then when people asked to leave, they're like, well, you're here on this court order, essentially, even though it's not officially a court order until a judge certifies it. But it takes days for that process to really happen. So, yeah, people ended up, you know, feeling like they were held on these petitions. And not even everybody understood that they had a commitment petition filed on them either. They were just told, like, some people were told, oh, we'll see tomorrow how you feel, or, you know, I'm not really sure that you're stable enough yet. Just sort of given vague responses. I think people really did feel held against their will.
If you're just tuning in, we're bringing our listeners up to date on a year-long BuzzFeed News investigation, allegations of patients being held against their will to maximize profits at Universal Health Services psychiatric facilities around the country, including one here in Jacksonville. It's an allegation the company denies. Lots of calls for reporter Rosalind Adams of BuzzFeed. It's 549-2937 to give us a call. Let's go to Chuck at the Beaches now. Hi, Chuck. Good morning.
Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me share. You mentioned earlier that their profit margin was 30%. I've heard Riverpoint mentioned quite a bit in the past for people who have active addiction problems. And I'm on the line right now, and I'm looking at this. It says Riverpoint Behavioral Health dodges correction of AHCA citation by ceasing substance abuse patients. Now, I'll tell you this. If you work at that facility, the number one cause of unintentional death in America is a drug overdose. And people who are having addiction problems, they don't want treatment. So when you get someone in there, how do you deal with that? And I think my understanding of this facility is it has done in the past quite a bit of help with people who have the addiction problems, and then you have people who are dual diagnosed and self-medicate, et cetera. So if you work at a place like that and you see people coming in and out and in and out and getting back on the street and dying, wouldn't it be your inclination to keep them and try and help them?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck. Rosalind.
Yeah, sure. Well, Riverpoint First is a dual diagnosis facility. So they do have to admit people first for depression, as substance abuse can be a secondary issue. But the law is pretty clear about when you can hold somebody against their will, and it has to be, they have to be a threat to themselves or others. And that really means you're having suicidal thoughts or actions or intent, or homicidal intent. So, yes, that is a larger issue with treating people with drug problems, that they don't always want treatment, but that doesn't mean that person doesn't have the right to leave the facility. This is really about the hospital keeping people who they're saying are suicidal or homicidal, and employees are saying that those people don't always meet the criteria.
Right. I'm not familiar with what the medical literature states, but is the criteria specific enough that the hospital staff you interviewed are credible in their assertion that people were being held that didn't meet the standard?
Yeah, and that's according to employees. They felt like they weren't always meeting the standard. It was the decision of when to hold somebody or to release somebody was often based on how many days of insurance they had left.
Let's go to Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I just wanted to touch on the point that Matt made. The people that he's talking about were almost certainly treated at the Mental Health Resource Center. And what makes them being exploited for finances so much the worse is frequently, and I can speak from personal experience on this, they receive minimal or no treatment before they're released after their obligatory 3-day stay.
Tom, thanks for that call. Lots of calls about this. Rosalind, what about that question?
I'm familiar with the Mental Health Resource Center, only very little. I don't know. I can't really speak to what treatment people are receiving. I do know that a lot of publicly or not uninsured people go to that facility, just in sort of learning about the landscape of mental health care in Jacksonville. But yeah, unfortunately, I can't really speak. I haven't interviewed anybody there. I can't really speak to the quality of care people are getting there.
The Mental Health Resource Center did just receive a federal grant, I believe, the Times Union reported over the weekend. We hope to have them on the program to talk about that positive news and how they're going to try to get matching funds to make sure that people do get the care they need. Meanwhile, we're getting tweets for you. Here's a tweet from a listener. Was there any specific harm caused by people being held? And how were families handled when they asked about their loved ones? Did your investigation uncover any of that?
Yeah, I think that any time that you go to a facility for treatment and you are trusting in the medical professionals to make the best decision for yourself, you know, you're trusting these professionals for treatment. And I think a lot of people that I talked to that did feel unnecessarily held, you know, they felt like they couldn't trust the hospitals again, or they didn't want to walk into a facility like that because they felt they were unnecessarily held. And I think in other specific instances, you know, some people didn't realize they were going to be held so long and they lost their jobs or things like that. Like, it really does. I mean, you're talking about taking somebody out of their life for a week. It's the point of the law, the point of the commitment law is it's supposed to be a very extreme situation. The law is very clear that somebody should be in the least restrictive setting possible. So being in a locked facility for a week is really at the very end of that. I did find that the patients who went to the facility that had family advocating for them, that had family calling the facility and saying, what is my, you know, loved one still doing there? Those were often the people that were able to get out a little bit quicker. Some people, I talked to them and their family and they didn't have full information, and the hospital sometimes was just very evasive about when they would be released. I think that's an incredible, difficult thing to handle, to feeling like being held like that and not to be able to reach your loved one and possibly losing your job.
Eric is in St. Augustine. Hi, Eric. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
How are you?
Hi.
Thank you. I'm kind of writing both sides on this issue. I'm a nurse who works for an agency, and I won't say which one, but I go to a lot of different facilities. Some of them are drug treatment facilities. It appears, and it seems to me, one, unless you've really dealt with, you're talking about people that are going into a facility for a multitude of reasons, some of which are drug-related, some of which are mental health-related. So you can talk to, if you go in and talk to 50 people in there, you're going to get different answers. Undoubtedly, there are probably people that they look for triggers to hold them a little bit longer, but there's usually a reason for that. Now, she just stated that, you know, what she found was that the people that had families that would call were calling and saying, you know, my brother or my sister or my husband, wife, whomever it is still in there, and why are they still in there? That's very good, because that means they have somebody that cares about them at home. Not everybody does. And if they're releasing, you know, if you're looking at someone who is obviously in bad shape and was brought there and has a drug and alcohol problem, and it's just going to be returned to the street, are you really doing them a favor by just saying, okay, fine, that's their real, you know, they can go ahead and go home, you know, home. And where's the backup and the facility or the people that are going to care for them?
Past the point of their stay.
You're kicking them out of.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric. Yeah. And he gets to the heart of why these are very difficult questions for mental health professionals sometimes to handle. Rosalind, your thoughts on that?
I do want to say, like, I'm not a medical professional. I'm a reporter. It's certainly not my job to judge when somebody should stay or leave a facility. My reporting is based on the people who worked in this hospital, eight licensed professionals spoke to me that they were concerned about the decision-making process in the hospital, that they felt like these were decisions that were not being made on medical issues, that they were solely being made on insurance, that they were sitting in morning administrative meetings with their CEO, with their directors, and they felt, you know, oftentimes bullied into keeping people longer and going to the doctors and saying, look, this person has days, we need to keep them longer. They didn't always feel like the facility was run that way. And I think they're really great medical professionals who work in these hospitals that do want to take care of patients. Mm-hmm. And they felt, according to what they told me, they felt like there was a larger administrative goal that was happening. So yes, I think that is absolutely a question of, if somebody's like, how do we treat people who need more days and who need more treatment? And maybe if somebody doesn't have family, they may need more treatment. What I'm simply pointing out is that the people in these hospitals have concerns about how people are being treated.
Loria in Arlington emails the show and says, a loved one of mine was an inpatient there voluntarily 4 times over the years, and our insurance paid full price for up to 5 days. A few times they kept him past the time when they should have. One time they sent him home when they should have kept him longer. We figured this was the system we were dealt with. I'm so pleased to hear that something is being done. Let's go to Mark on the west side now. Hi, Mark. Good morning. You're on the air.
I'm a nurse, and I routinely work with patients coming from and going to River Point. And from what I didn't hear the very first part of your interview, but from what I understand, I mean, we're not talking about, well, it should have been, probably could have been released after 3 days, but they were kept 3 months. It sounds like you're talking, well, they could have been discharged after 3 days, but they were kept 5 days or 6 days, which, and again, more power to them. I deal with these people a lot. And the first thing they tell you is, I don't need help. And the second thing is, when am I going to get out of here, ostensibly, to go buy drugs and drink alcohol and do, people, they should be kept 6 weeks if we had the ability to. So, I mean, I understand that you were talking to the nurses and the techs and all these people, but I'm on the side of River Point.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. All right. So, Rosalind, as you've reported this, did you get that point of view from anyone who felt that the hospital was actually doing the right thing by the patients?
That was the company's response, that they were, they call it days on the table. They look at how many days an insurance company has approved, and they say they are wary of releasing somebody before their insurance runs out or the amount of days that they've had approved finishes up as a matter of safety to the patient. So that was what the company said. I think that there were a number of people who had ethical concerns about only keeping people based on how many days they had. And so we reported both of those in our story.
And as we're learning this morning, a bipartisan team of senators is now calling for further investigation. What do you expect to happen when it comes to the interest of Charles Grassley, Elizabeth Warren, other legislators on the Hill?
It will be interesting to see what happens. I mean, these are prominent lawmakers, and I'm sure that the Inspector General and the Department of Justice will appropriately update them, and we'll see what happens.
In the meantime, thanks for sharing your findings of this investigative work with us. She's Rosalind Adams of BuzzFeed News. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Much more still ahead later. Culpepper as the Jaguars lose yet again, this time to the Vikings. But up next, how Florida celebrates winter. We'll go inside the pages of Flamingo magazine as Floridians head outside.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
When you're experiencing the in-depth content of WJCT, you know there's always something more to explore, regardless of the device. It's a special commitment sharing the world, and as such, WJCT is an indispensable service here on the First Coast. Truth is, however, that such content, whether you access it via television, radio, or various digital platforms, is expensive. Costs that are largely funded by people like you. So please, during this season of giving, stand up now for your cherished values of curiosity and excellence with your vital year-end investment. Your support makes it possible for WJCT to continue to share your community, your world. Do so today at wjct.org. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. Tune in every Monday night at 11 and discover new music. As one of the most enduring musical genres, blues can give you a shoulder to cry on, a heart to hang on to, and is here to let you know
everything gonna be all right.
Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I said, baby, everything gonna be all right.
I said, welcome back. It's winter in Florida, kind of a special time here in the Sunshine State because while much of the rest of the country is bundled up indoors, here in Florida, the winter months mean it's time to get outside. Jamie Rich is publisher and editor-in-chief of Flamingo Magazine, the new statewide magazine distributed all across Florida from Key West to the Panhandle. She's here now with more about the December issue and a look at how Florida is celebrating winter. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Yeah, that's right. This issue is all about getting outside and enjoying the splendor of Florida from the Panhandle down to the Keys, and our issue really covers a lot of outdoor pursuits and fun things to
do. You're covering a lot of ground. Let's begin with, this is interesting, I did not know that we had this in Florida, but there's a big polo culture in the state.
Oh, absolutely. Wellington is not far from Palm Beach. It's about 20 minutes, and it's the winter polo capital of the world. Mm-hmm. So we have polo athletes and horses. I think the estimation is 10,000 horses come to Wellington during the winter season for polo, but also for other equestrian events. But it's a great time to get down there and just experience the power on the field.
And what's fun about Flamingo Magazine is this is really the first magazine that takes a look across the state. So you're covering a lot of ground and really different regions of Florida as you look at stuff. But the outside issue, I think, is particularly exciting because in the wintertime, not only do all the natives come outside and play, but a lot of people spend part of their year down here, too. So there's a lot of energy coming into the state
exactly.
In the winter months.
Exactly. And one of the things I would say that we're doing, we're trying to unify the state. We're trying to give Floridians a place to turn for inspiration on things to do, ways to look at the state in a new lens. Not only, here we know about Orlando, we know about Miami, we know about Tampa, but also for people living in those areas to take a look at places like Jacksonville. I mean, we're headquartered here, and we do provide a platform for Floridians to take a look at all the cool things that are going on in this area as well. We have a culinary feature in this issue that talks about these really fabulous culinary excursions, if you will. They're not only set on farms. A lot of them are set on farms around the state, but they're set in unique settings. And one of the groups that we featured in this particular story is right here in Jacksonville, the Legend Series.
Oh, right. And that has taken off like a rocket.
Yes, it has. So it's also a great gift idea for the holidays. If you want to give that person in your life who loves food, the foodie, you know, take a look at these excursions, these culinary excursions. It might be a nice like weekend getaway to either do it here in Jacksonville. There's one in Alachua County just down the road. And really the way Jacksonville is positioned in the state, pretty much anywhere is a short day trip away. So it's a great inspiration to go out and, mm-hmm. and try some of these things.
And you're trying to inspire people to, when they look through Flamingo Magazine, to try some of the things that you write about. The Legend Series is a great example. That's a pop-up mystery dinner. You get on the email list. You have no idea what's going to happen. You get an email. You're told to go to some strange location. They've done them in parking garages and abandoned buildings. And
right, a cemetery. We've
cemetery.
Even featured one that was in the cemetery.
You get there, and the best chefs in the area are serving this incredible meal. I've heard just incredible things about. I have not had the opportunity to go yet, but that's
well,
in
pretty
this
difficult.
Issue.
It's pretty difficult
yeah.
if you don't know about it, and a lot of people don't know about the Legend
yeah.
Series. They don't know about these other culinary excursions, pop-up dinners, if you will. They do have an element of exclusivity to them. They're not just something you can kind of sign up and do. You have to really plan and kind of figure out a strategy to get a ticket to one of them. So they're really cool, and it's a great way to experience the state.
When you look through the magazine, you'll get some ideas on how to get access to this stuff. Now, I don't know if you saw the other day that they rescued a manatee from a storm drain in
yes,
Ortega.
Yes, I did.
You have a manatee feature this month as well.
Exactly. Who doesn't love manatees? The story we have, though, takes a more serious look at the animals that everybody just loves to like pictures of on Instagram and Facebook, but they are at the center of a little bit of controversy in the state. They have been considered endangered, but now their status is possibly being moved down to threatened, so that would change the way they're protected. And mm-hmm. People are really concerned about this because they want to make sure that manatees continue to thrive in the state.
So much content in Flamingo Magazine, and it really, as well as being so informative and educating us about all the variety of the state, Jamie, I have to compliment you as well. It's a beautiful magazine.
Well, thank you very much.
You put a lot of talent behind the aesthetics, the photos, the content, the writing. It's a huge endeavor, and you've lifted this off statewide from right here in North Florida. So I just can't give you enough kudos for that. It's an exciting new addition.
Well, thank you very much. And one of the things about storytelling is the visuals. If you have a fabulous writer and someone who's written this amazing story, many people will pass it by if the visuals aren't there to draw them in, the photography, the design. So that's just as important to us as, you know, the written word on the page.
It's Flamingo Magazine, the new winter issue on newsstands now. Jamie Rich is founder, publisher, editor-in-chief of Flamingo, and kudos. Have a wonderful holiday season. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Much more still ahead. We'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the president-elect's cabinet picks are often at odds with the mission of the agencies they'll run. Business leaders predict a dramatic reduction in regulations on everything from wages to power plant emission rules. What Trump's nominations could mean for companies and American workers.
Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, the website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part two. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
Welcome back. Well, the search for treasure is a fascination as old as mankind itself. And now WJCT television viewers will have an opportunity to travel around the world and discover the treasures created by master artisans. It's all in a groundbreaking new series, Destination Craft with Jim West. WJCT is the presenting station for Destination Craft. You can check out the new show starting next Tuesday as we air 4 preview episodes. Host Jim West is on the line now with a preview. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you this morning, Melissa?
Doing great, thanks. We're excited to see the new show as you travel. You're known as a world traveler and host. This is combining not only traveling, but also a cultural look at how people all over the world get into their artisanship. Tell us about the first few episodes.
Well, actually, tomorrow we launch our very first preview, which we're going to be taking viewers to Bali and discovering all sorts of crafts and learning more about the culture and these master artisans who are creating all sorts of things like batiking and wood carving. The show's premise basically is about discovering these artisans who really are not looking for any fanfare or looking really to be famous. Because of this, what they're looking for is just the opportunity to present their passion, present their craft. And so in traveling around the world and filming them, we have an opportunity to not only show audience members this particular craft, which in many cases is very unusual, but also these master artisans who've been doing it for like 60, 70, and some 80 years, if you can imagine.
How did you find the stories to tell, and how did you hit upon this idea for a television show?
Well, I am a CEO of a large craft travel company called Craft Tours, and we've been traveling around the world for the past 20 years. And the last 7 years, I kept thinking, why aren't we filming these people? They're incredible. So the idea then was planted, and then, you know, 7 years later after that, we've started filming, and we've finished filming season one. So with that, it's just the opportunity to highlight these people, highlight the culture. You know, in each episode, we not only show the crafts, but there's also a cooking segment so people can learn a little bit more about a traditional dish that's served in that particular country. Maybe they have a special tradition they do for holidays. So we really want an opportunity to show everybody all over the world, really, what's happening with the artisans.
It's exciting, and we'll be airing the first episode, preview episode, Tuesday at 1 o'clock on WJCT as you start in Bali. But you've traveled pretty much everywhere in the world, correct, Jim? I don't think there's anywhere you haven't been.
Thank you for saying that. I have traveled in a lot of places. I was a professional cruise director for about 10 years, so that really opened the gateway for me discovering the world. And then from there, I've owned the travel company for about 20 years, and we do lots of land tours. So, you know, traveling in Antarctica with Sir Edmund Hillary, which was pretty amazing. And then, you know, you travel to places in the remote areas of Guatemala and go like we're going tomorrow. We're going to take the viewers to Bali. But it's discovering a lot of exciting things that are happening around the world. And the one common denominator is that we really are all similar. I mean, no matter where you go, you just find that people are pretty much the same. And, you know, 16-year-old boys are still looking at 16-year-old girls, and parents are still telling their children what to do. And so it's just really pretty much the same all over. And the same thing with crafts. Crafts are our universal language, and so people can identify whether you speak that language or not. You can still identify by looking at the crafts.
It's Destination Craft, debuting on WJCT Tuesday at 1 p.m. Check it out. Host Jim West with us. Thanks so much, Jim. Happy traveling.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you.
A quick break, and in a moment, Cole Pepper as the Jaguars see yet another loss. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air.
Miss, please turn around. Reese Witherspoon celebrated her 40th birthday in style. She had a great time.
It's nothing to do with me.
Billy Eichner talks about Billy on the Street, his TV game show where he quizzes people on the street about pop culture. Eichner also stars in Difficult People and had a recurring role on Parks and Recreation. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Get the latest news about WJCT programming information, highlights, and events with the WJCT e-newsletter. Go to WJCT.org and sign up today. WJCT. Log on. Find out.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, another loss for the Jaguars, but hey, at least they were a little closer this time.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
The Vikings rolled in Jacksonville. Culpepper's here now with a look at the lowlights and some other sports news and notes. Good morning.
Good morning. This is what we've gotten to, isn't it? Celebrating that it wasn't terrible. It was just kind of bad. It's been a rough season. I think you can fairly make the point that this has been the worst season in Jaguars history in so many ways, not the least of which being the expectations where they were when the season began and the truth of what has happened. As time has gone on, the Jaguars actually led the game against the Vikings yesterday when the fourth quarter began, but they couldn't finish the deal. Just another game with a variety of mistakes. But there was some history made. It's just the fourth time in NFL history that a game finished with a final score 25-18.
Why is that significant?
It's a weird number. I mean, okay. it's only happened three other times. Hey, again, we got to celebrate something here, right? I got to be honest, I can break this game down, but it's really just another loss and their eighth straight overall to drop them to 2-11. So let's focus on some other things, including at halftime of the game, the Jaguars inducted former wide receiver Jimmy Smith into the team's Ring of Honor, the pride of the Jaguars. He's the sixth name on the wall at the stadium. Smith was visibly emotional as Shad Khan introduced him and had his name revealed on the stadium. It's fair to say that nobody in the pride of the Jaguars, and maybe nobody in Jaguars history, has traveled a longer road than Jimmy Smith, both on and off the field. And it's great to see that something, an honor like that, meant so much to a guy who meant so much to Jaguars fans in his career. So Smith's up there now with Tony Boselli, Mark Brunell, Fred Taylor, and Wayne and Dolores Weaver.
Pretty select group there.
Really impressive group, and they're running out of space on that wall, so you wonder how many more names are going to go up there anytime soon. I think the next would probably be Smith's running mate, Keenan McCardell, but Tom Coughlin also should be up there.
That's a good point, Cole.
At some point, he needs to be up there. You wonder if maybe some of the rumors about him
coming back to town.
And the Jaguars have had conversations with him on some level, whether that's as a team president or football operations head or head coach or whatever else.
Do you think there's truth to those rumors?
I know that they have had those conversations. They've had them going back to May. Kind of how serious they are, I don't know. But this is a guy who one of the things he's going to be aware of is his Hall of Fame status. Mm-hmm. You have to have stopped coaching for 5 years in order to be considered for the Hall of Fame. You can be in an administrative role, but not be a coach and still be considered for the Hall of Fame. And a guy who's won two Super Bowls as a coach and took the Jaguars to two AFC championship games before that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. That may be something that impacts his decision making as he looks for that next job or whatever that position might be with the Jaguars or some other team.
If he comes back to Jacksonville, just the jolt of energy that might bring could at the very least give them a little bit of a psychological boost.
Yeah, and I think from a ticket buyer standpoint and a sponsor standpoint, they need something. I've had conversations with season ticket holders and with others who just say, I can't make a decision about next year because I don't know what it's going to look like. And they continue to drag this out. So at some point, they need to take that next step.
Let's talk a little bit more football. Let's talk for a minute about the Heisman Trophy Awards Saturday night in New York.
Yeah, it went to Louisville sophomore quarterback Lamar Jackson. He becomes the youngest winner of the award and the first from his school to win it. One note, Jackson was originally recruited to Florida, but changed his mind when the Gators fired Will Muschamp, which they should have, by the way. So a lot of Gator fans today thinking, look what we could have had. Well, you maybe could have had the player, but you weren't going to have the right coach in position there. He will be back at Louisville next year because he's not eligible for the draft.
And so we'll see if he can do what only one other man has ever done, and that is win two Heisman trophies.
Kudos to him. Meanwhile, kudos to two local high school football championship teams, University Christian and Trinity Christian.
Yeah, and for Trinity, it's their fourth in a row and seventh overall in school history. Bowles and Ponte Vedra lost in the state finals for their only losses of the season. It was really a banner year for high school football in Northeast Florida. Half of the state title games had a team from our area competing in them.
Pretty exciting. And follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Check out the Sam and Cole podcast for all your sports news and notes. And listen every Monday for Cole's sports here on the show. And a few cold cuts here and there. Thanks so much, as always.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, thanks to all of our guests and callers. That's our show today. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And next on Diane Rehm, the latest on reports of Russia's alleged meddling in the U.S. presidential election. Potential cyber threats to democracy. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.